A literal impression of Homer's Odyssey from someone who's literally just heard it. Get into my man, Muse, the twists in his spine. So many times he strayed once he sacked Troy's sacred city. So many the peoples whose towns he knew, whose thought he solved. And many the times on the sea he suffered griefs down his warm breath, saving his own life and the return home of his companions. But no, he did not protect his crew as eager as he was, for by their own outrageous acts were they continually lost, the fools who went through the oxen ranks of high-going Helios the sun, feasting daily away. But it was he who subtracted from them their day of homecoming. From somewhere around there, goddess, daughter of Zeus, pick us a line, even us. There were all the rest of them, as many as fled steep destruction, already at home, escapees from war, not to mention the sea. It was that man alone, in want of his return home, not to mention his woman, the wife, whom a bossy young nymph was holding back, Calypso, radiant among goddesses, within her hollowed caves, desiring him as her husband. But when the year arrived, as round and around they come to the point again, within which the gods spun for him to make his return home into Ithaca, not even there was he escaped from his struggles, even among his own near and dear. And all of the gods felt pity, apart from Poseidon. That one used to rage in a frenzy against Odysseus, God's match, before he reached his motherland. The thing is, that god was gone visiting among the Flaming Eyes, who exist afar off. Your Aethiopes are divided in two, the furthest distant of men, some where Hyperion sets and some where he rises. He went to attend a roasted cookout of bulls and young rams. There he was, at any rate, having a good time, seated at the feast. But the rest of them were gathered in the chambers of Zeus the Olympian. And amongst them he started the conversation, the father of men and of gods, for he minded in his life's breath about blameless Aegisthus, the man whom Agamemnon's son killed, far-famed Orestes. Preoccupied with that, he voiced his lines among the deathless. God damn! Get a load of how these mortals blame the gods! For it's down to us, they say, that bad things exist, but it's that lot themselves, through their very own recklessness, get grief beyond what is budgeted. As just now, Aegisthus, beyond the budget, went and fucked Atreides' wined and wedded wife, and the man himself he murdered upon his return home, knowing full well his steep destruction. Since we told him beforehand ourselves, we sent Hermes the Watcher, the slayer of Argus. Don't be killing the man, no, don't seduce his wife. From Orestes there will be a reckoning for Atreides whenever he comes of age and lusts for his livelihood. That's how Hermes spoke, but he did not persuade the mind of Aegisthus, well-meaning as he was. Now he's paid the price, all in a heap. And taking his place then, the goddess, Aulis Athena. Our father Cronides, commander-in-chief, to right, that man met with an agreeable destruction. So should any other fellow be destroyed, would get up to that sort of thing. But about my Odysseus, my heart breaks for the skillful one, stuck with a bad card, the man who so far from friends suffers pain upon woe, on an island with a current right round, where the navel is of the sea. The island is tree-laden, and a goddess lives in the house, daughter of Atlas Baleful Mind, who has plumbed the depths of the entire sea and holds the pillars all by himself, tall and great, which hold apart the earth and the sky. It's that one's daughter holds back the wretched, sorrowing man, always with the soft and wheedling talk. She charms him so that he will forget Ithaca. But Odysseus, eager to make out just the hearth smoke leaping up from his motherland, longs to die a death. But none of that, eh, gets the attention of your own heart, Olympian? Now, wasn't it Odysseus, by the Argive ships, gratified you executing sacrifices in the wide land of Troy? Why then so angered? Why at odds with Odysseus, Zeus? And he took back her place and addressed her, cloud-gatherer Zeus. Child of mine, what's this lie escape the fence of your teeth? What the hell? Me? How could I forget God's Odysseus, who is preeminent among mortals for his mind, who more than anyone gave sacred things to the gods, the deathless ones, this lot who hold the broad heaven? Obviously it's Poseidon, earth mover, continuously and obstinately angry about the circle eye, whom he blinded in his eye, God's match Polyphemus, whose power is the greatest altogether among the Cyclopes. It was young Thoosa bore him, daughter of Phorcus, wizard of the unfruited brine, in her hollowed caves after she had sex with Poseidon. That's the reason, you see. Poseidon Groundshaker and Odysseus, well, he doesn't actually kill him, but he drives him away from the earth of his fathers. But come then, how's about we, here present, all of us, put our minds to his return home, how he might travel? Poseidon will lay off that anger of his, for I dare say he won't manage much in the face of all of us, deathless gods, against our wills, struggling alone. Then the goddess replaces him, Aulis Athena. Our father, Cronides, commander-in-chief, if this is now actually dear to the blessed gods that he return home, Odysseus, overthinker, to his very own house, then, A, let us spur Hermes the runner, slayer of Argus, on to the island of Ogygia, so that as soon as may be he gives the plan, lines without slip-up, to the babe with the nice braids, the return home of Odysseus' enduring mind, that he might get going. But I myself shall, B, go to Ithaca, for the sake of his son, gin him up and put the fighting spirit in his mettle, that he call to assembly the proud heads of hair, Achaeans, and renounce all the suitors in marriage, those men who continually slaughter his thronging flocks and shambling hoof, spiral horn cattle. I'll escort him to Sparta, and also the sands of Pylos, to learn of the return home of his only father. Perhaps he'll hear something somewhere, and as well, so he gets him a quality reputation among people. So she spoke, and bound under her feet some beautiful sandals, ambrosial and gold, the ones which bore her over the wet and over the limitless earth with the breaths of the wind. She grabbed her brave spear, tipped in sharpened copper, heavy, huge, and strong, the one she uses to tame lines of warriors. Only those heroes who piss her off, she of the weighty sire. She went down from Olympus, flashed and danced from the peaks, and stood in the country of Ithaca at the front gate of Odysseus, on the threshold of the hall. In her hand she held the coppered spear, looking like a guest friend, Mentes, leader of the Taphians. And of course she found the manly wooers, Some at the time were playing at dice before the doors, lightening the mood, seated on the hides of cattle whom they themselves killed. And there were their heralds and bustling attendants. Some were mixing wine in the bowls with water. Others with porous, springy sponges were washing down tables and set them out, while the rest were portioning out many servings of meat. He saw her first by far, Telemachus the godlike, for he sat himself among the suitors, somber at heart, daydreaming about his excellent father. What if he came out of nowhere, set the suitors to panicked scattering through the house, and he himself got back his due and ruled over his own domain? Fancying these things, sat among the suitors, he spotted Athena. Straight out the front door he went, ashamed in his spirit that a strange man had stood so long outdoors. He stood right next her, took her by the right hand and received the coppered spear, raised his voice and addressed her lines with wings. "Hail, stranger, you'll be among friends with us. Only later, once you've tasted of a meal, will you reveal what it is you need." He spoke and took the lead, while she followed, Pallas Athena. But when they were well inside the lofty house, he first carried the spear and stood it against a tall pillar inside a well-carpentered spear stand, where, in fact, the rest of the spears of Odysseus' enduring mind were stood in their number, then led and sat herself down in a chair once he'd spread out a linen. The chair was a work of art. There was a stool under her feet. By himself he sat alongside a decorative couch, far from the rest, the suitors, that is, for fear the guest would be irritated by their ruckus and go off his supper, finding himself among such excessive toffs, but also that he might question him about his absent father. An attendant brought and poured out hand water from a pitcher, beautiful, gilded over a silver basin, for washing. Alongside she drew a carpentered table. Bread the revered house manager brought and set by, once she'd added lots of short eats, generous with her stores. The carver lifted and set by platters of meats from every kind of cut, and placed by them golden cups. A herald checked on them often, pouring wine. And in came the suitors, the manly fellows. First they seated themselves in a row on the couches and the chairs, and their heralds poured water over their hands, their female slaves piled bread for them in baskets, and their fags topped up the bowls with drink. Then they laid hands on the goodies set ready before them. But when they had exorcised the passion for drink and food, some of these suitors got into something else, singing and dancing, for these are the dessert of a feast. A herald put a gorgeous guitar in the hands of Phemius, who used to sing among the wooers by compulsion. So he strummed the vamp and struck into some beautiful singing. But Telemachus addressed Aulis Athena. He held his head close so that the rest wouldn't hear. "My guest, would you find fault that I'm talking over it? These men can care about such things, the guitar and the song. Easy when they're eating up another man's livelihood for free. A real man whose white bones no doubt are rotting in a rainstorm, laid out on shore, or the waves are rolling them in the brine. If only they could catch sight of that man returning home to Ithaca, every last one of them would pray he were lighter in his feet rather than richer in his gold and gear. But now, see how he's gone down to a bad deal, and there's no one for us, no warmth, not even if someone travelling the earth should declare he was on the point of coming. No, that man's day of home return is lost. But come now, tell me this and recount it accurately. Who and wherefrom are you among men? Where's your city and your parents? What kind of ship did you come on? How did the sailors bring you into Ithaca? Who do they claim to be? Because I rather doubt you got in on foot. And this also, tell me truly, so that I understand. Are you on a new pursuit, or are you another paternal guest friend? Many men used to come to our house, lots of others, since he as well was a man who used to get around. In turn the goddess addressed him, Owl Eyes Athena. Well, for my part, I'll tell you this, and no mistake. I'm Mentes, son of clever Anchialus, and so I am indeed, his son. You've heard of the Taphians, don't they love their oars? I'm the king. That's how I've come here just now, with a ship, and of course comrades, sailing over the drunken sea to deal among the foreigners, to Temesa after copper, while I'm trading fired iron. And this ship of mine is stood over in the countryside, far from the city, in the harbour with the river current, under the woods of Neion. I say that makes us each other's guest friends, paternal ones, from the beginning of things. Just you go and ask the old man, Laertes the hero. Of course, he's the man whom they say no longer comes in to the city, but afar off on the farm he suffers aches and pains with an old woman for a helper who's good for food and drink whenever the soreness takes him in the knees as he potters up the crusher's hill in his vineyard. But now I've come, for they said he was in town, you see, your father. But that's a man whom the gods are distracting on the way. For he is not yet dead upon the ground, radiant Odysseus. No, he's still living somewhere, held back on the broad sea, in an island with a current right round. Dangerous men have him, country brutes, who restrain the man against his will. But now, do you know what? I'm going to prophesy, just as the deathless ones cast it into my spirit, and as I suspect it shall come to pass. Not that I'm any sort of prophet, mind. I'm dyslexic when it comes to reading birds. But it's not going to be long now that he'll be away from the earth of his fathers, not even if he's held by iron chains. He's putting his mind to how he returns, since he's Mr. Contriver. But coming off it now, tell me this and recount it truly, if ye ain't such a big lad as Odysseus' own. You're frightfully like in your profile and lovely eyes to the very man, since many a time I hooked up with such a young looker, before, mind, he got on board with going to Troy, when every man else, the best of the Argives, set off in the hollow ships. From then on I myself never saw Odysseus, nor him me. Her then, honest Telemachus, faced and said, In that case I'll speak to you, stranger, very accurately. Mother says that I am his, but for my part, what do I know? For no one yet witnessed his own begetting. I myself could wish that I were the son of someone blessed, a man whom old age met supervising his own possessions. But now he who was born most ill-fated of mortal men, that's whose son they say I am, since you ask. To him in turn the goddess spoke, Owl Eyes Athena. No fear for your family, anyway, that the gods make them nameless in future, since Penelope brought to birth such a lad as you. But come, tell me this, and recount it carefully. What feast day, what crowd could this turn out to be? What's your need for it? Is it a hosted banquet, or a wedding? Because this here is no potluck. This lot strikes me as arrogant in the extreme. A man would be embarrassed, seeing so many shameful acts. Any sensible chap who got involved. And her, in turn, honest Telemachus faced and said, Stranger, since you really want to know and are pressing me on the matter, this household was once set to be rich and blameless, solid, while the man himself was still in town. But recently they've been wishing otherwise, the gods, plotting evil, the very ones who made him more invisible than any other human being, seeing as not even were he actually dead would I grieve so, save he was brought down with his comrades among the Trojan people, or in the arms of his friends, once he wound up the skein of war. They would have made himself a tomb for a start, the whole Achaean League. And just think of his child, for whom he'd have won a great reputation and standing. But now the tornadoes have ingloriously snatched him up. He's gone his way invisible and unheard of, and for me, pain and agony is what he's left behind. And it's not just grieving him I cry and moan, since there's another set of evil cares the gods have made for me. For as many men as rule the islands, the Krem, Dulichium and Same, and of course wooded Zacynthus, together with those who lord it over rocky Ithaca, the lot of them are wooing my mother, and they're wasting the house. She neither refuses a hateful marriage, nor is she capable of making a consummation. But these chaps continually eat and waste away my household, and soon enough they'll destroy me as well. She burst into anger and addressed him, Pallas Athena. Bloody hell, but you're missing Odysseus, who's gone. Oh, could he but get his hands on the suitors, shameless things, for if he would only come to the house, take his stand at the first gates, holding an axe and a shield and a brace of spears, in the same shape as I myself first got to know him, in our own home, drinking and carrying on, come out of Ephyre, from Aelus, son of Mermerus, for he went as far as there on a quick ship, did Odysseus, in search of a man-killing chemical, so that he could christen his copper-tipped arrows. But that man wouldn't give it, you see, since he feared the retribution of the gods, who are forever. But my own father gave it, for he loved him dreadfully. Let the Odysseus that was come have a meeting with the suitors. They would all become short-lived and bitter-wived. Ah, well, all of that lies in the lap of the gods, were he to come home and pay them back, and also were he not, in these rooms of his. But I urge you to consider this, how you might push the suitors out of the house. But come now, pay attention and heed this advice of mine. In the morning summon into assembly the heroes, the Achaeans. Declare your intention to everybody. Let the gods be your witnesses. Command the suitors to scatter to their own properties. But mother, if her spirit urges her to get hitched, let her go back to the house of her father, a very powerful man. They will organize a marriage and sort out a dowry, a large portfolio, as big as should go with their own child. And for yourself, I'll propose something in detail, in case you obey it. Fit up a ship with 20 oarsmen, one of the best, and go off to get information on your long-departed father. In case some fella talks to you, or you hear a rumour from Zeus, which most of all is how people get their news, first off go to Pylos and question radiant Nestor, and from there to Sparta, by the side of blonde Menelaus, for he was the last to come of the Achaean shirts of copper. Now if you hear of a life of your father and a return home, as worn out as you are, you could still endure a year. But if you hear of him having died and that he's no longer living, return home then to the mother earth of your fathers. Heap him up a burial mound and set him up with funeral gifts, a good many of those, much as he deserves, and let a man have your mother. But when you've managed this and finished the job, spare a thought then in your breath's vessels and your spirit, for how, now in these halls of yours, you'll kill the suitors, by deceit or out in the open. Why on earth should you be carrying on like a baby? You're getting too old for that. Or haven't you heard how he reached out and grabbed his fame? Radiant Orestes! among all mankind, when he slew the father murderer, Aegisthus Tricky-Wily, who slew his famous father. And what about you, friend? For I see that you're handsome and tall. Now be brave, so that the next generation speaks well of you. As for me, I shall go down already to the swift ship, and of course to my comrades, who no doubt are getting irritated at my hanging around. Take care of this by yourself, and take in the advice I have given." And in turn, honest Telemachus faced her and said, "Oh, stranger, you're saying these things in good faith, like a father to his child, and I shan't ever forget them. But come on now, hold on so eager for the road. Take a bath and enjoy yourself. Relax at your heart's ease. Go to the ship with a gift in hand, delighted inside. An expensive one, very fine, which will be a treasure to you, for myself, like we're proper guest hosts, gifting guest friends." And she takes his place then, the goddess Owl Eyes Athena. "Don't retain me further. I'm keen for the road. A gift? Whatever your own heart bids you give me, give it when I've come back again to carry home. Pick an extra nice one. It'll be worth your while in the exchange." Now, just as she said this, she departed, Owl Eyes Athena, as a bird flew up like smoke through the flue. And in his spirit, she put fight and courage, and put him in mind of his father, more even than before. But himself, considering everything in his breast, was amazed in his life's breath. And the thought arose, that was a god. And right away he went after the suitors, a godlike bloke. And among them the singer was singing, a famous one, and those men in silence sat listening. He was singing the return home of the Achaeans, miserable, which was enjoined on them from Troy by Pallas Athena. And from the upper chamber she understood the man's god-inspired song, the daughter of Icarius, passing wise Penelope. She descended the lofty staircase of her house, not alone. In her case, of course, a couple of handmaids followed. But when she reached the wooers, radiant among women, she took her stand by the pillar of the tightly joined roof. Before her cheeks she held a glistening veil. A trusted handmaid, one on each side, stood by her. She started to cry, then addressed the godly singer. "Phemius, you know so many other titillations for the daily bread, deeds of men, deeds of gods, the stuff that singers make famous. Sit and sing one of these for them, and let this lot in respectful silence sip away at their wine. But leave off this bitter song, the very one which tears apart the heart in my chest, always, since on me most of all does the unblinking sorrow devolve. For such a head do I long, the face always in my mind, of a real man, whose fame is wide, even down Hellas and central Argos." And then honest Telemachus faced her and said, "Mother of mine, why after all begrudge that trusty singer to delight in whatever direction his mind nudges him? It's not the singers now who are to blame, no. It's Zeus responsible somehow. It's he who doles it out to men who earn their way, however he likes to each and every. This man bears no fault for singing the evil fate of the Danaans, for that is the song that people usually turn into a hit, whichever is the latest doing the rounds for an audience. Let your own heart and spirit endure the hearing, for not Odysseus alone lost his day of home return in Troy, but there were also many other guys who perished. No, go into the house and take care of the jobs that are your own, the loom and the distaff, and give orders to your attendant as they go back and forth at the task. Commands will be the concern of men, men in general, but myself especially, because that's who's boss in the home. Herself was amazed. Back she walked homeward, for she was taking on board her son's honest disclosure. She ascended into the upper chamber together with her women attendant, and then she cried and cried for Odysseus, her dear husband, until sleep came on her, a sweet sleep cast upon her eyelids by Owl Eyes Athena. But the suitors got in an uproar, stood up through the shadowy hall, and all of them swore and prayed to get her horizontal in bed. But among them honest Telemachus began speaking his mind. Wooers of my own mother, sporting your violent erection, for now let's take pleasure in feasting. Stop this shouting, since this is a beautiful thing. It is to listen to a singer. And such a singer is this man here, just like the gods, that voice. In the morning let's go to the market and take our seats, all of us, so that I may declare my command to you straight up. Get out of the house! Go prepare different menus! Eat up your own provisions! Take turns by households! But if this here is the better choice for you, more worthy, seriously, to destroy the livelihood of a man on his own without compensation, go ahead, scythe away, but I shall cry out to the gods who exist forever, if whoever Zeus grants it that deeds of payback come to pass. No recompense then when ye are cut down within these rooms. So he spoke, and the whole lot of them grew teeth into their lips, and were astonished at Telemachus, because he was talking boldly. It was him, then, whom Antinous addressed, the son of Eupeithes. Telemachus, no doubt it is the gods themselves instructing you to be a big talker and to speechify so boldly. Let's hope that here in sea-flanked Ithaca it's not yourself that the son of Cronus makes the king, which is, by dint of birth, your patrimony. Him, then, honest Telemachus faced and said, Antinous, will you resent me whatever I may say? I just might like to win that, Zeus willing, as they say. Or are you saying that this is the worst thing could befall humanity? For it's not such a bad thing to be the king. Soon enough his house becomes a rich one, and he himself becomes more highly prized. But don't you know there already are kings among the Achaeans, many others even in sea-flanked Ithaca, youngsters as well as old-timers? One of these may get this job because he died, radiant Odysseus. But it's me shall be lord of our own household and of the slaves whom he got me as booty, radiant Odysseus. Him in turn, Eurymachus, Polybus' child, faced and said, Telemachus, don't you know, these things, they lie in the gods' laps. Whoever it is in sea-flanked Ithaca shall be king of the Achaeans. But you yourself would keep your property, this house as well, where you're the lord. Fear not that a man might come, any man whatever, who by force against your will would hack off from your property while Ithaca is still civilized. But I do wish to ask you, there's a good chap, about your guest. Where does such a man come from? What homeland does he claim to be from? Where now's his family and his father's furrowed earth? Perhaps he bears a message of your father coming, or in hopes of collecting a debt here of his own. Is that what he came for? He sure leapt up and left in a hurry, nor did he wait to be introduced. But all the same, he didn't look a bad sort, as faces go. Him, then, honest Telemachus faced and said, Eurymachus, you know my own father's return home is utterly lost. I no longer trust in news, if any should come, nor do I pay attention to a prophecy such as Mother solicits when she summoned a prophet into the hall. This guest friend of mine was my father's, from Taphus, mentees of Anchialus the Clever, he claims to be, his son, and he is lord over the Taphians, lovers of oars. So said Telemachus, but in his mind's vessel he knew it was a deathless goddess. But the rest of the men turned toward dancing and songs of desire, and took their pleasure, waiting the while for the evening to come. And upon them, in their self-pleasuring, the darkness of evening arrived. Then indeed they walked off to lie down, each man homeward. But Telemachus, where his chamber in the gorgeous courtyard had been constructed up high, that the area all around could be seen, is where he went to bed, turning many things over in his mind. And with him she was carrying flaming torches, a trusty, knowing woman, Eurycleia, daughter of Ops, the son of Peisenor, a woman whom Laertes once bought with his own money, when she was still in the first bloom of youth. He gave 20 oxen, and she honoured her on a par with his trustful spouse in the halls. But he never had sex with her, in a bed. He was avoiding the anger of his wife. She it was who went alongside with the flaming torches, for most of all did she used to love him, among the slaves, and nursed him when he was a wee lad. He opened the doors of the chamber, close-fitting they were, and sat himself on the bed and took off his soft undershirt, and that very chiton he tossed into the hands of the shrewd old lady. She folded the thing and smoothed the shirt out, hung it up on a peg alongside the corded bed-frame, made her exit out the chamber and pulled the door to with a hook made of silver, and drew on the bolt with a thong. And there, set for the night, covered in a fleece of wool, he kept deliberating in his mind's vessel the road that Athena had showed him.